This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Michael? Is it working?
Yes, yes. I want to know, where are the nonviolent Christians out there, the nonviolent Christian majority, who should be denouncing that guy who shot up that that clinic?
Yeah, that was an interesting case. I was wondering the same thing, because I saw a couple articles posted about it. It's like, well, you guys are all calling out Muslims for the Paris attacks, but where are you guys condemning this guy?
Yeah, and that was a weird way to start a Freedom Fiends episode. That was far more, I don't know, partisan, political. I don't even know what the word is, but we don't do that here. We just laugh while Western civilization collapses. But Dan, Scottish Dan, is trying to get on here, but we can't get him on. He's been droned by G5. No, what do they call the NSA in England, in the UK? MI5, MI6. Mm. Yeah. Yep. So hopefully he'll be around soon. But what's up, young Nick?
Not a whole lot. I've been keeping busy, and I'm not used to being up this late anymore. I'm pumping myself full of food, carbs and protein, so I can stay awake.
Really, food, carbs, and protein put me to sleep. Although,
really,
they can put me to sleep, but they also, carbs do. But I also noticed when I was a bike messenger, when I was young, like when, you know, 22, 23, 24, if I had a night, I mean, that's a job where, like, not being aware can kill you, or hesitating can kill you. You need to be physically at top of your game and have your reaction time really high, which, you know, you need sleep and food and good nutrition. Which bike messengers generally don't get any of that. So, you know, if I had a night where I really didn't sleep much or didn't sleep at all, I did find that calories could sort of take the place of sleep, but that was when I was doing something that required calories. Whereas sitting on my butt talking into a microphone from the undisclosed location of Intergalactic Prairie Studios, a mile above sea level, I don't know. I think if I ate more, I would just fall asleep. But you're young and smart. And how old are you now? Tell us about you, for people who don't know about young Nick.
Yeah, I'm 17. And
Son, like you're on radio.
Sorry, man. I gotta watch that. So yeah, I'm 17. I'm a little bit of a farmer here in Oregon. We're raising yaks, Tibetan yaks, and American guinea hogs, which are a small pasture raised heritage breed pig, and we're making it work out here. I'm actually about to break even on the yak that I recently butchered. Yeah, it's exciting. I paid, I think, a total about $700 to get into the meat business, including the cost of the animal, cost of butchering, and the licensing fees to the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And we've made, I can't remember how much money, but we're getting there. We're getting close.
I think that's so cool, because most people, I mean, there's probably a lot of young people who are actually doing things like that. But my opinion of young people is all they do is take selfies of themselves and share it on the internet and think that's an achievement. You know, it kind of is like that, man. When you go on social networks, I don't generally have a lot of friends on social networks that are teenagers. The ones I do end up, like, in my feed are because I know you. And then, like, their friends of their friends of their friends, everybody's just got their, like, you know, their stylish Apple smartphone taking a selfie of themselves in the mirror. That is today's youth. And as Louis C.K. said, like, most of them haven't done anything. All they've done is chosen and rated things, you know, that other people have done. Like, that's all these kids today do, is sit around and and go swipe left and right on the world. Like, I like this, I don't like this, hot, not, you know, mm-hmm. no thumbs up, three thumbs up, whatever you kids call it. But Nick's out there every day shoveling yak food and the output of yak food. And, you know, why aren't more kids doing what Nick's doing and doing a radio show?
I know. So that's one of the things I get frustrated with. And it's one of the reasons why I was happy to get out of school. I haven't really talked about this because I don't.
Oh, yeah, you're a high school dropout.
That's right.
It doesn't sound as good to most people. But put it this way, you've learned more on your own since you dropped out than what's better? Someone who drops out and starts their own business or someone who sits in school consuming other people's goods and picking and choosing and saying, yay, nay, swipe left, swipe right, you know? Nick's doing it right.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words. You're inflating my ego, and that's always nice.
Have you considered, like, getting the local or state TV news to do a story about you? I can think of pros and cons of that. I mean, the pros are, like, you might sell more meat for a while. The cons are, like, you know, some agency might find out you exist who, you know, you didn't know about, and mm-hmm. they didn't know about you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've never considered that. But yeah, that might be interesting.
Oh, I totally think they'd do it. But you know, I mean, really, when you approach news agencies, you have to do their job for them. You basically have to say why it's a story. You have to find the angle for them. And local and state, you know, three letter ABC, NBC, CBS News have a really limited view of what's a story. Really, they have, you know, two things other than breaking news and weather. They have, like, let's say why the state should exist. Like, Nima Vedati, the co-founder of this show, used to be one of those anchors. And, you know, like, he'd have to go down and interview the local police chief about why they need more money to fight the marijuana problem. You know, like, literally, like, why we need more tax dollars spent on that. And if you ever did like something against the police, like, oh, the police murdered somebody in handcuffs, let's investigate that, the police wouldn't cooperate with them on any more stories and they'd lose access. So that's how it works. And then the other kind of stories are what they call puppy parade, which are usually in the last 3 minutes of the news. And that's where you would go. You'd be the puppy parade. You know, the good news to make you feel like a little less nauseous about everything else. The good news, it's not really news. You know,
yeah.
Small town boy does good, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting to look into.
Yeah, although it'd probably result in a few more meat sales and then just, I don't know, something you wouldn't like. Like,
yeah,
I don't know, cow people tipping of yaks or something.
Oh, that would be bad because people would get harmed. You don't want to mess with yaks.
That's, oh, I thought you meant you'd harm them. The yaks would harm them.
Yeah. No, yeah, the yaks. I think I've told the story on the Fiends about our bowl on how I got tossed by that thing. Go ahead,
tell it again.
Okay, so this story involves, it did involve alcohol. Not on my part. I was not consuming anything.
Were the yaks?
Maybe. So they got out at some point during the day, and my grandfather and my great uncle were staying with us. And it was just us at home, and we were about to start eating dinner. Ironically, we're going to eat yak burgers, and my grandpa calls me over and says, Nick, there's yaks out in the yard. So we had to go out and get them, and my uncle might have had a few too many to drink, so he was a little bit too confident with the animals. He was getting a little too close. He was being a little too loud.
They don't like it.
And no, and my bull, who is a bottle-fed bull, he's very used to people, so he's not scared of somebody who's yelling at him. Instead, he's more willing to face them down. And it's rut season. It's been rut season for this last few months.
Did he try to mate with your uncle?
No, he thought that my uncle was competing with him, I think, and trying to mate with the cows.
Oh, man, and with the cows. Oh, the cow yaks?
Yeah, the female yaks, yeah. And he was not trying to, I assure you. And so my uncle, I came around the corner of the house, and my uncle gets tossed up in the air. That's just all I see. It come around the corner of the house, and my uncle lets out a death scream. Like, I thought he was dead. One of these primordial, deep, gut-wrenching screams. Like, oh, no, the guy's dead. So I run over there hoping, like, oh, he can't be dead. I'm hoping not. And I'm about to start wailing on the bowl with the stick I had. And then I realized, oh, no, this is just going to make him mad. He's going to keep going after my uncle because that's where his attention was focused. And so as soon as I hesitated, right about to hit him in the shoulder, the bowl turns on me and just flips me over on my back. And I think I did a somersault and a flip. And it was crazy. And then the bull just walked away. But ever since, that bull has been trying to challenge me to a fight. So, man, I don't let anybody get near the animals anymore.
Wow.
It's been interesting. It's kayak bull.
I was playing with a synthesizer on my Android phablet. What a time to be alive. We're going to go to a break here pretty soon. But I want to talk. I was hoping that we'd have our Scottish friend for this, but we can start the discussion without him. Maybe he'll jump in at some point. I want to have a discussion about computing in our lifetime, because you're 17 and you've always had the internet, right? Like, as soon as you could talk. Is that true? Yeah. And I didn't have the internet till I was 30, and I didn't have it at home till I was 32, because it didn't exist until I was 30. And Dan is between our ages, so he probably had, you know, some years without computers and then some years with computers. And it's kind of an interesting, and really the libertarian angle in all this is that the reason computers have progressed so exponentially, you know, in the past 40 or 50 years is basically because the government's been out of the way compared to other industries like cars. Like, cars are so heavily regulated and computers are not. And they're still trying to, like, jump in and regulate computers, but it kind of can't be done, at least especially on a software level, because, you know, anybody in his home can change the world. Like, the guy who invented file sharing was Nick's age when he did it, and, like, by the time people knew about it and the government was trying to, like, regulate it, everyone was doing it. And when everyone's doing something, it's really hard to outlaw. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
This is the Freedom Fiends. I am Michael Dean. I'm talking to young Nick. Nick Hazelton.
I'm here.
Yeah, we have quite a range of ages of Freedom Fiends co-hosts. Nick is 17, and let's see, I think Randy's 63. Maybe. So, and I'm 51. So I always say that the Freedom Fiends is where the hip, that's Nick, meets the hip replacement. That's me. I'm not there yet, but people said I'm sounding good. Said I'm sounding not as sick. I'm still dealing with a lot of health issues, and I still have no energy, and I'm still, you know, can barely walk out to get the mail, but I guess I'm sounding better.
Yeah, you definitely do sound better.
Yeah. I told you today that I would do that interview that I've been putting off for months with you because I was too sick.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yep. Hopefully, I'll be healthy enough then to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping to do it today. Like, yeah, let's do it right now, man. Yeah. But, nope. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
It's okay. So, I want to talk about the history of computing because it's something that intrigues me. Because when I was a kid, computers were big and not available to the average person. And first time I laid my hands on a computer was at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire when my sister was going there, when I went to visit her during the summer. And she took me into the computer lab and dropped me off. And computer lab then was much like a computer lab now, you know, in a high school or college. It was a room full of terminals, except the terminals weren't computers. They were like just dumb terminals that connected to a giant mainframe in some back room somewhere where like scientists in lab coats actually got to touch the computer. It was kind of like there really wasn't access back then. Like computing cost so much back then and used so much resources that like you had to have a darn good reason to be on a computer or no one would let you on one. You know, like people didn't have them in their homes. Computers took up, you know, a whole room and cost millions of dollars and weighed a ton and, you know, used arcane languages and didn't have mouse and didn't have, you had to do no programming to get it to do anything. And most of the stuff that people were getting it to do wasn't even that interesting. Like I remember, you know, my sister took this class and by the end of the semester, like, what have you done? Okay, well, I wrote, you know, a variation on someone else's program to play tic-tac-toe with the computer. And like, you couldn't do it in real time. You had to like program all your moves, put it on punch cards, which were like paper cards with holes in them. That was the memory medium. And then bring them to these computer scientists and they would run your cards. And then the next day they'd give you a printout, which was like a long sheet of paper connected dot matrix printer paper that had your result on it. And if you had like one mistake, it wouldn't run and you had to start over and you didn't even know like what the mistake was. You had to go figure it out. And this was 1974. I was 10 years old. I also got locked in the bathroom in that computer lab. I think some of the kids there, the students locked me in the bathroom because I was annoying. Probably, but it turned me off computers for a couple more decades. So, what was your first experience with a computer, Nick?
Oh man, that's a good question.
Speak up.
That's a good question. I don't really know.
They've just always been there.
Yeah, it was probably when I was really really young. I might have been at my cousin's watching him play a video game. That would be my guess.
What kind of computer did he have?
I don't remember. I remember watching both of my cousins play Age of Empires and then later World of Warcraft. And I don't know at what age I was.
Yeah, and I asked you tonight if you had an Android device and you said no. And it turns out you have two of them.
yeah.
And that's kind of like what computing has become to where like people aren't, they don't need to be aware of what the operating system is or the nuances of it, or, you know, like there's no code to use it. You just sit down and start using it. You know, it's kind of ubiquitous and everywhere and embedded. And, Android is actually the most common operating system in the world now. It's far surpassed everything else. We're going to talk a little bit about where it came from. It's spooky beginnings. After this trip to the market, Google wants to replace government in a good way and a bad way.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Up like you're on radio, son.
I am on the radio.
What happened? You weren't on the radio for a half hour.
That's true. The internet happened. I have no control over the internet. It just
are you powerless bends me over to the well. Internet?
I am. Yeah, the internet runs my life, and it gives and takes.
Yeah. The internet has almost been a higher power in my life. I've been on it so long, like way before most people were. I was on in 1994 at my job, which sounds cool, but it's not. It's not like I had some sexy programming.com job before most people heard the internet. No, I worked at one of the first web cafes. I was like a busboy while people ate steaks and sat around on the internet in a place in San Francisco that went out of business. And I think the reason they went out of business was they didn't understand that people wanted privacy on the internet. And the way it worked was they had big flat screen projection TV monitors on the wall. So like you'd be using you'd be eating your steak and using your computer at your table, but everyone in the restaurant could see what you were doing, which is really not how people want to use the internet. people want to, when people are using a computer in a public place, I think people using them want other people to think they're doing something cool, and they want to be asked about it, maybe. But, you know, go to any cafe in Los Angeles, and there's, like, you know, 30 people in there with laptops, and, like, 15 of them are writing screenplays. At least last time I was there, I think laptops are really on their way out. People are using phablets now, which are phone-sized tablets. You know, the tablets, phones that are also computers that are bigger than 6 inches that look ridiculous when you use them as a phone, but they're great for the internet because you can scroll, you don't have to scroll all around to do stuff on them. I got a couple of them and I really like them. And what a time to be alive. So, Dan, how old are you and what was your first experience with a computer? How old were you?
Well, I'm 28, nearly 29, and we got a computer in the late 90s. At that time, actually, we were one of, like, in school, I remember friends and stuff, very few people had really computers at that time, I remember. Like, some people did, but not a lot. And we got the internet about that time, but it was totally different then because the internet was expensive then. Like, they charged you, I remember, per hour or something.
Was it AOL?
I don't think it was AOL.
When was this?
This was late 90s? Sort of,
yeah. Early 90s.
Mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
As far as I remember. I remember it was so bad that sometimes my brother was so, he loved the internet, and my mum sometimes had to hide the cable because he was running up huge bills. And then they came out with these sort of free plans, but they was like, you could use the internet only, it was only before 5 p.m. or something like that, and then you had to pay afterwards and stuff. These kids, they wouldn't know it now.
Yeah. Yep, you had to, it was weird when the internet was a, limited resource. I actually, by the late 90s, it was not a limited resource for me, but it was an expensive resource. I was in one of the first neighborhoods where you could actually get DSL, and I got DSL. You had to live in, like, San Francisco, New York, or Chicago, or I think it was Austin, you know, like 4 or 5 cities, and then you had to live within 1,000 feet of a phone company, like of the physical building. There was some weird technological limit to it. And I just so happened at that time in 1990, I had DSL in like 97 or 98. And it was like $55 a month, which, you know, now 55, that'd be like, you know, $90 a month. And, you know, I didn't have as much money as I do now. I was spending more on internet than I did on food. Put it that way. You know, it was that important to me. But it was kind of mind-blowing having, like, unlimited, fast-ish internet when everybody else was, you know, counting their minutes on AOL. It's kind of neat. And
I remember the first time I heard about broadband, I was like, what, so you're connected all the time? Because I remember, obviously, until then, it was always that dial-up nonsense where you used to hear that mad tone.
The mating geese sound, yeah.
I know, it's funny how it's actually changed so much in such a short period of time. We're only talking about, what, 20 years? But yeah. I suppose we're still probably in, what, the infancy of the internet, really. It's still, in terms of, like, if you think about it, it was probably the stone age of the internet just now still.
Yeah, it is, and it's, but it's growing so much faster than any other industry, you know? You think about, like, how slowly changes happen in the automotive industry or, you know, in the educational public school system or anything that's got a lot of government control. You know, it's kind of like computing almost slipped between the cracks of government domination. And they're trying to play catch up now. Like, one of the things I saw a bunch of in the past couple of weeks was Square people from governments and people who love governments yelling that we need to outlaw encryption, or that governments need backdoors into all encryption, because the people that attacked and killed everybody in Paris used encryption. And I heard them calling for outlawing Bitcoin and saying, you know, that kind of terrorism is sponsored by Bitcoin. And it's like, there's no proof that those people in Paris used Bitcoin or encryption. They probably did not use encryption. They probably met in, you know, in back of a cafe in Paris. They probably met in person. So I don't, you know, Vice President Joe Biden tried to outlaw encryption back in the 90s, like early before the internet, before the web, you know, like 90, 91. He tried to pass a bill to do it. And really, encryption is not just the ability of, like, you know, you and me to plot secretly and not have the government read it. It's also, like, the basic underlying of how everything on the internet works, especially the financial things and just the protocols of, you know, sending an email and having it go to the right place and having it, you know, not someone not being able to change it in the middle, that kind of thing. That all depends on encryption. And there's a really good pushback now coming from some of the corporations. I know Apple is saying, you know, we can't have a backdoor for governments because that means a backdoor for everybody. And technologically, that's pretty much true. You know, if you give one entity a backdoor into an encrypted environment, it's not going to just stay with that one person, because somebody else is going to hack that. Look how easy it is for, you know, governments to hack people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and then we've got all this stuff, you know, in the UK about how they're going to try and, you know, be able to see everything that we can, well, basically all our stuff online. You know, the government's going to be able to look at all, everything we're looking at and things. And some people go, I still hear people here saying, like, oh, well, it's fine, I've got nothing to hide and all this kind of thing. But that's not the point. It's not the point at all. I mean, like, and that's, well, in, I was going to say Nazi Germany, but in East Germany, I mean, the Stasi used to open people's letters and stuff like that, didn't they? And, like, look at people's communications. So what's the difference?
Yeah, and to anybody who says, I have nothing to hide, so I don't care if they spy on me, which is a really square, really messed up way to think. And I actually, those words came out of my mouth 10 years ago, before I kind of had my age of enlightenment of everything. And my wife just stared. I was like, right after we got married, like 10 years ago, right after we got married, I said that about something. And she just stared at me literally with her jaw dropped. And she's like, you can't be serious. And, you know, that was, like, looking back, I know, like, I'd married the right girl when she had that reaction. But, yeah. You know, she's never trusted. We kind of, like, brought each other, not even kicking and screaming, but just, you know, from, like, not trusting government. I was always into, like, I never trusted authority ever since I was a little kid. But for some reason, I was like, oh, governments are, they're different. But I figured it out. And, you know, the thing that's wrong with saying, I got nothing to hide, here's why you shouldn't feel that way if you're listening and you feel that way. the people in power change. They always want power, and they always want the ability to punish, and the ability to destroy, and the ability to throw people in cages, and the ability to crush the dreams of others. That's all politicians do. That there's a slight variation between who the left wants to punish and who the right wants to punish, although more and more they're both just the enemies of freedom. But check this out. Okay, like, let's say you're listening and you are someone who believes you know, that homosexuality is wrong. I don't believe that, but I don't have any problem with you believing that, as long as it's a belief only and you're not arming governments to kill people like the Taliban would and like ISIS would. You know, if it's just your belief, I'm fine with that. So let's say somebody gets into power who decides that believing that homosexuality is wrong is hate speech and needs to be outlawed, and anybody who won't stop talking like that needs to be thrown in a cage. Are you really going to say you've got nothing to hide? And, you know, nothing to hide going back 20, 30 years, whatever you've said on the internet. Conversely, if you feel the opposite, you know, if you feel that homosexuality is wonderful, it should be taught in public schools, it should be forced down everyone's throat. If you feel that, you know, what if some uber right Christian person becomes president and starts acting like Hitler and decides that people who believe that should be killed? Are you really going to say, oh, I got nothing to hide? And you can extrapolate that to any belief you have that's controversial to anybody. You know, just believing that you should be able to raise your own kids, believing that you should be able to own weapons, believing that you should have choice, your own choice of doctors, anything that you believe is a freedom, somebody else believes is encroaching on them. Libertarians don't believe that. We basically believe that freedoms are freedoms, and if it doesn't hurt somebody, if it upsets somebody, that's their problem. It's not a violation of a right. So a little more about computing.
I'd like to chime in on that, is you brought up raising your own kids, and that's something that is really a big threat. I know you're not a big fan of Carlos Morales, but he has done some great work on the CPS front.
He used to work for him. He used to take people's kids away.
Exactly. And so that's where that he comes from. Yeah.
And he used to be a horrible person. I don't know what he's doing these days, but
and so it's a legitimate threat. Like, that can happen. And depending on what you say on the internet, you can have your kids taken away. So that is a legitimate fear.
Yep.
That you should have.
Yep. We're gonna go to the market. Free market and freedom fiends. And we'll come back and talk more about computing and the free market of computing and thoughts.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Yeah. It's Freedom Fiends. I'm Michael Dean. Talking to Nick Hazelton and Dan Green. We're talking about the history of computing and the free market of computing. We like it. It kind of transcends governments. And Google, I don't know, Google does a lot of things with governments, but I think a lot of it's because they have to. And because it's profitable. They're actually making military drones, which kind of disturbs me. But maybe one day Google will be the government. That's scary. We don't need a government. The only governments I'd like is something that's a government-like service provider that you can opt out of, regardless of your geographic region. I mean, if there's anything that's dead by now, it's the idea of that you have to be tied to a specific flag because you're born in that area. That is the idea that was created by kings to get you to die for their riches. It really is. There's nationalism is stupidity. All right, so Nick's going to read this 2005 article. It's archived from Business Week on some other site. It's an article that almost slipped through the cracks. It's almost amazing we could even find this, but the internet will find a way. And we found it. And it's an article about the Android operating system being bought. The Android company being bought by Google. A lot of people don't know this. Google did a lot of the development on Android, but it was started by another small company, and Google bought it. And this article is weird because it's like, it's hard to even tell what Android is in this article. And at that time, even like competent business analysts didn't know what was going on when they read these kind of things. It was so obscure. And like, I don't think Google even knew where they were necessarily going with it. But go ahead and read this, Nick, please.
Yeah, sure. So this is titled, Google Buys Android for its Mobile Arsenal. The search giant quietly acquires the startup, netting possibly a key player in its push into wireless, the next frontier in search. Wireless. And what could be a key move in its nascent wireless? Nascent
means early, young, yeah.
Okay, wireless strategy, in its nascent wireless strategy, Google has quietly acquired startup Android Incorporated, Business Week Online has learned. The 22-month-old startup based in Palo Alto, California, brings to Google a wealth of talent, including co-founder Andy Rubin, who previously started a mobile device maker, Danger Incorporated. Android has operated under a cloak of secrecy, so little is known about its work. Rubin and co. have sparingly described the outfit as making software for mobile phones, providing little more detail than that. One source familiar with the company says Android had at one point been working on a software operating system for cell phones.
Yeah.
And so in next paragraph, seeking a mobile edge, in a 2003 interview with Business Week, just 2 months before incorporating Android, Rubin said that there was tremendous potential in developing smarter mobile devices that are more aware of its owner's location and preferences. In quotes, wow. If people are smart, that information starts getting aggregated into consumer products, said Rubin. Rubin declined to comment on Android or its sale to Google. A spokesperson for the search giant would not elaborate on the deal, only stating, "We acquired Android because of the talented engineers and great technology. We're thrilled to have them here." Google has been toiling.
Let me explain why I'm laughing, and then you can go on. I'm laughing for a couple of reasons. One, because and I mean, these are business analysts. These are smart people who understand industries going, Google bought something and I don't know what it is, but maybe it's something, you know, like, I mean, the idea of like mobile computing, like, is so in it, it, you're not even aware it's computing now, you know, like literally there are people who are probably like, I'm not on the internet, but I'm on Facebook through my phone, you know, like they don't even know what they're looking at because it's just kind of embedded. And this article really comes off like Google's going to do something with it. But really, like what I think it is like the key is the new phones, like they have to have all your information to do all the cool stuff they do. And I wonder how much of that is a secret plot. Because Google just runs on information. That's their what they sell and what they rent and what they use, and they have more of it than anybody, more than any governments. That's why governments just want to take it from them. And the NSA did not quit collecting your phone information. They just outsourced it to the phone companies. and released a press release that made them look cool and hip and nice and not like spies this week. We'll be back for hour two of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, and now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
I like it. I remember when Black Flag did the Freedom Fiends. I remember when Black Flag did that reunion tour. The only thing that was good about it was, like, it was to support kitty cats, like a cat shelter. But I remember a review of it, because it didn't have Rollins, and it didn't have, like, it didn't have any of the singers you remember, you know? I think it had Chavo Pederast singing, which is one of the... Like, really? Did someone use that name? Wow, cool. That's extreme. That's up there with our naming your pub Free to Pedos, which is a reference to Peep Show, which we're going to talk about because it's back on. And we're going to talk about Dan's glue-sniffing days here on the Freedom Fiends. But I also wanted to talk about the one of the greatest reviews I've ever read of a show was when Black Flag did the reunion. I think Greg Ginn was the only founding member on all the songs. And... some reviewer said that all the notes were in the right place, but it was lacking something. And I can't help but get the feeling that somewhere in Cedar City, Iowa, there are 4 16-year-olds playing these same songs in a basement better. So, do you ever sniff glue there, Nick?
No,
I never don't have. Nick Straight Edge, I think. So, Dan, you've had a interesting and colorful life. Have you sniffed glue?
Not glue, per se. I remember, actually, one time, funnily enough, I was in this record shop, and I had one of those, I think it was a Kurt Cobain lighter, you know, one of those Zippo lighters. And I was like, innocently buying gas for it, and the guy was just sort of looking at me, you know, like one of these guys, you know, loads of piercings covered in tattoos, and he was looking at me, and I was like, yeah, just that. I was a teenager, and he went, now, is this for your lighter or for your nose? Tell me honestly.
And you were like, I've never considered that, but I'll try it.
Thanks for the tip.
So you have not huff glue, but what?
Oh, maybe some other chemical solvents.
Carbana not glue. There's a Ramone song called Carbana not glue. It's about his mother took away his glue so he couldn't sniff it, so he had to sniff some other chemicals. But we don't recommend that here on the Freedom Fiends. We're just riffing on this joke. We found this site called thehardtimes.net, which is kind of like The Onion, but it's all about independent music. And it's pretty funny. It's all fake articles. They're really funny. And they're kind of probably funnier if you've been in some independent bands and slept on some floors for beer money in towns other than yours while playing in a band. But there was an article on here. It says, health-conscious punks begin vaping glue. And I had to share this because I've been a critic of vaping. I used to vape. I don't criticize vaping. I only criticize the idea that people think it's completely safe because it's not. But this is pretty funny. And there's another article on here about something becoming kind of a computing self-aware thing. What's this article? You got it there, right?
Yeah, it's about a sorry, I just find it so funny. People probably find it as funny as me, but it's about a band A shoegaze band whose pedal board has become self-aware.
Yeah. Yeah. And starts criticizing and trying to have decision-making capacity, not only in their style of music, but also in the human race's direction.
That's the future. I mean, how more electronic music can you get? Technology starts becoming a band member.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. The programmer of Fiend Phone, Derek Slopey, good friend of mine, has a t-shirt I really like. It says it's the Google logo, but it says Skynet in the style of the lettering of Google, which is pretty funny, you know, about systems becoming self-aware. I don't know. I think it just comes down to, like, central planning. I mean, I think that in the 60s, didn't America and Russia try to completely, like, remove humans from the equation? And it almost of deciding when missiles should launch, and it almost started World War III. I mean, like, literally almost wiped out the human race.
Really?
I guess people have to not be so quick to kill, and also not take humans out of the equation, and also not try to centrally plan everything. I think people have a God complex to where they think that they can control everything, and that they should, which, you know, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something, and it doesn't mean it's going to make the world better. And when I say people should not be so quick to kill, I'm not a pacifist. I am I have a loaded gun within grabbing distance. I have two of them, actually, and a loaded rifle, you know, five steps away, and I don't leave home without a gun. And, you know, if someone pulls a knife on me, I'm not going to negotiate with them, and I'm not going to quote the Bible at them. I'm going to stop them with a firearm. You know, I may attend their funeral and read some Bible verses later, but, you know, and feel bad for their mortal soul. And, you know, then we can discuss how society failed them and harmed them as a child. But, you know, in the meantime, violence is only good in self-defense, man. So anyway, do you want to talk more about computing, guys?
Yeah, we could talk more about computing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Computing.
Who wants to go first?
Nick, do you have anything you'd like to come in on?
I don't know.
Young friend.
I guess I don't. I'm actually learning from this conversation. It's interesting to listen to you guys, because I'm not very nerdy. I'm not extremely tech savvy. I'm getting better as I'm building websites and I'm having to do all this stuff. But
is your new website up?
I don't know. I haven't checked, actually.
What is it?
HazeltonFarm.com. I'm going to look it up right now, too. But, yes, it is up. That's fantastic.
Yep, it's up.
It actually works. It's not completely done.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. But, hey, it looks better than most new websites that are work in progress.
Yeah.
It's got your phone number there. I could bug you.
Oh, no.
No.
You have my phone number anyway.
I know, but now the world does.
That's true. I'm okay with people knowing my phone number. I'll just, if you guys call me to talk to me, I'm just going to give you my yak sales pitch, and if you're not going to buy yak meat from me, I'll probably hang up.
Oh, I see you haven't done the text yet on the guinea hog and goat site. It's got that, like, placeholder. Mm-hmm. Lorium ipsum dolor sat amet consecrated elit morbro. What's that called? There's a name for that.
I don't remember.
Of writing. It's called Jabberwocky or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What happens when I Google it? Oh. There's a template of all this somewhere on Wikisource. You can download this whole Lorem Ipsum is the name of this. Let's see. It's in publishing and graphic design. Lipsum is standard placeholder text used to demonstrate the graphic elements of a document. What a time to be alive, Nick. All right.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm coming in on this whole technology thing way beyond, like, what you guys are talking about. So I don't understand how half of this works. Like, you guys have a little bit of a background on how it all started, so you kind of understand more of the software behind it. I And I just don't know any of it. I have to read all the forums on how to work with Squarespace and HostGator and whatnot.
I don't even know what Squarespace is, and I do though. It's based on where you're located, but I'm always located in the same chair in the same house. So it wouldn't really do me any good. And I don't know. I guess Android phones like know your location, but something that's specifically about sharing your location with the public to me is kind of scary. It's kind of like, yeah, if you want to kill me, here's where I'll be at noon, you know, that kind of thing.
I had this debate when I got my new phone. I had this debate with my younger brother because it was asking for my location and like I denied that, and then it was trying to get me to put my fingerprint on it, you know, so that it could like so that only I could unlock it and stuff, this kind of thing. And you know, I was like, I'm not doing that. And my brother was all like, oh, you're paranoid, you know, why not? And I was like, well, I don't know where that fingerprint's going. And for example, like this kind of thing's getting a lot more common. I mean, I went on a holiday to Florida in 2013, and see, to get into the theme parks, Disneyland, Universal Studios, and that, they take your fingerprint there. Why does Disneyland and Universal Studios need my fingerprint? They that say it's scary. Also you can get back in and stuff. That's weird, man.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
Man, really, I'm not bizarre. Going to any of those anymore.
Yeah. I've never been. My wife goes to them. My fingerprints are online. I mean, are on record with my local government or state government because I have a concealed carry permit. And I had to get fingerprinted for that. And let's see, where else? I was fingerprinted in 1994 by the San Francisco jail. I shouldn't even be saying this stuff because this stuff is probably all lost to the world. But now people could go find it. But I used to bring an NA speaker, Narcotics Anonymous speaker, and have a meeting once a month into the jail as public service, community service. It was not like forced on me. It was something I did as part of my recovery. And the jail had to fingerprint me for that, which I think they do just because they can. You know, I think they're just like, oh, you want to come into our, you know. That was kind of scary too, because when you go in there, they tell you that it's a no hostage jail. I'm like, what does that mean? And that means if somebody takes you hostage and holds an improvised knife to your throat, we are not opening the gate for them.
That's comforting.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, enjoy your stay.
Okay. Yep.
I've never been in a jail before for really? Any purpose, not even to wow. visit. No, I've never been in one.
I'm surprised. You've gotten away with a big life there, man.
I know. I've been lucky.
I spent a night in jail, but I've never been arrested, which is kind of weird. I'm like the only person I know who's never been arrested, too. It seems like everyone I know has been arrested. And there's people who even say, like, you're not a good libertarian if you've never been arrested. But, yeah, I spent a night in the drunk tank once, like 25 years ago. But they did not. And they did fingerprint me, but they did not arrest me. They just let me go in the morning. It's kind of weird. Now they would arrest you no matter what. You know, if they had you in jail, they'd arrest you because it's revenue generation. You know, they'd find a way to, like, make you come back and pay a fine or something, or pay a fine to get out. So, we're talking about the history of computing. And, you know, I remember computing being looked at as a horrible thing that was only for controlling people. That was a belief in the 60s. Like, I remember reading Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman, and, like, you know, he told you to go into the computing departments at the college and sabotage the computers because they were using them for, I think they were using them for, like, registration for the draft or something, like college computers. But, yeah. That was a belief that they would only be used for evil. But really, it's like the use for evil and good are parallel, happening at the same time on the same device. Because, you know, without giving your Android phone all the information and the ability to locate you at all times, it can't really do much. You know?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. but they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Here's an article. Local punk only sniffs fair trade glue.
Yeah, there you go. If you trust it.
So, Nick, you got something real and scary to read. Go ahead and read it.
Yeah, this is What's an article from Gizmodo.com.
They know. And, I think that's the site, actually, that coined the phrase chromed robot turd, and they used it once and never use it again, and I picked up on it, and it's become like all the Fiend fans use that to describe their mobile device now.
Yeah, I use that. I didn't know that was from here. Interesting. Yep. Well, we have an article here titled, Cops can make you fingerprint unlock. Oh, and it's like, well, that didn't make sense. No, cops can make you fingerprint unlock your phone, and that's not okay. It starts off here. A Virginia Circuit Court judge recently said that it was not okay for cops to force suspects to unlock their phone with a passcode. Thanks, the Constitution. However, the judge also ruled that it was okay for cops to force suspects to unlock their phones with a fingerprint. Wait, what? It's like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So it keeps going here. The case in question is a little tricky, but the implications of setting such a precedent are huge. In the Virginia case, police were investigating a man accused of trying to strangle his girlfriend. Since the man had a video surveillance system set up, the cops had reason to believe that there might be evidence on his phone. And so after obtaining a search warrant, they asked the man to unlock his phone with a passcode so that they could look for it. Citing his Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate himself, the man refused, and the police took him to court. Based on the law, the judge's reasoning sort of makes sense. He basically said that the biometric data is not covered under the Fifth Amendment. What? Police can lawfully obtain DNA, for instance, as a part of an investigation, so why should a fingerprint be treated any differently? Well, it appears that we have a bit of a loophole, since fingerprint technology on smartphones like Touch ID was essentially implemented to do away with passcode and give users more security. It's terribly ironic that it actually gives police easier access to private information. However, this is a perfect example of technology moving faster than the law can. The precedent set and laws written that allow DNA collection, for instance, came well before fingerprint technology appeared on smartphones. In fact, how did this happen? I just lost where I was accidentally. Okay. In fact, Virginia passed its law allowing DNA evidence to be collected from suspects, regardless of the Fifth Amendment, all the way back in 2002. A lot's changed since then, and the timing of this recent Virginia judgment is especially interesting. Quite curiously, the topic of advanced technology limiting police access to suspects' private information has been pretty hot lately, since Apple and Google both implemented advanced new encryption method that make it virtually impossible for police to gain access to data on smartphones. Cops hate this. Arguments for tech companies to relax their encryption policies to make it easier for law enforcement to gain access to private user data bubbles all the way up to a FBI director, James Comey. He thinks that companies like Apple and Google are enabling users to place themselves above the law. That's in quotes, place themselves above the law. Though it's also worth pointing out that the police don't always invade people's privacy in the name of the law. And then here's the last paragraph, if you want me to read that. So now there's another way. At least in Virginia, there is. It's unclear if this circuit court ruling will be appealed, and it's worth pointing out that police might still be unable to access the suspect's data in this case because it's possible that they'd still need a passcode. Nevertheless, it sets a dangerous precedent for cases like this around the country and serves as a chilling reminder that the watchman can sometimes see around corners.
Yeah. What did it say, Dan? What do you think?
It's, well, why I didn't put my fingerprint on my phone to unlock it, basically, you know, because, I mean, the thing is, I mean, people don't seem, a lot of people don't seem quite relaxed about this sort of thing for some reason, which I find kind of bizarre, because it's, I mean, even if you do have nothing to hide, as they say, it's the principle of the thing. I mean, surely you should be allowed some privacy from, you know, the prying eyes of the state. What kind of disturbed me maybe a little more recently is, you know, after these Paris attacks, I mean, a lot of the sort of more on the right newspapers here, not only were they frothing at the mouth to bomb Syria, but they were, one newspaper actually suggested that that Snoopers Charter, they call it, or the Internet Communications Bill here, that would basically, that will allow the government to spy on all our internet use. There was one newspaper that said, oh, they should speed this up after the Paris attacks. And it's that kind of, I mean, there's a lot of people now thinking that that's a good thing. I mean, yeah, stop people who are going to, you know, do things like that. But it doesn't mean that you have to spy on everybody. It's just too far.
Yeah. I'm kind of worried about this next generation other than Nick. I think there's a lot of people who, like, how, you know, don't think you're bad.
You,
if you
and
want
the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
In Survivor Max 2, School Bites, Maximus scavenged through a wasteland swarming with the undead. Desperate to find the medicine he needs, he discovers a community of survivors at his former school. Has he finally found the safe haven he's been looking for, or will he discover that school bites? Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, and read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
What sound do they make when they're flipping you over your uncle?
They make a deeper sound than that. It's like a very deep bark. I can't.
Give me an example. Can you do it?
it's loud though. It's,
you don't want to wake up your yaks. Mm-mm. Are they sleeping? Mm-mm. Do they sleep at night?
I don't know about when they. I know that during the summer. They are mainly nocturnal because they sleep during the day because it's too hot for them to get out. But I don't know about during the winter.
What kind of shelter do they have?
Right now, they don't have they don't have much shelter. They have trees. They have trees for shelter.
I thought you built them a barn or something.
Oh, we did, but they're not there anymore because we couldn't handle them on the pasture there.
Wow.
They ate down everything. Because
we
had
okay, though, right?
They're fine. The dry summer killed our pastor off, so we had to move the yaks into our other pasture.
Killed our pastor. Killed the head of our church. So, I was the first person I knew to cyberbeg. This is kind of funny. I was cyberbegging in 2000, the year 2000. When I was making my movie DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, and there was actually a newspaper. I have this somewhere. I should find it and post it. I think it was in Vancouver when I went on film with when I went on tour with the film. Some local newspaper somewhere, I was showing it, actually did an article where they mentioned that I was begging money or like asking for donations to make the film. And this was such a forward-thinking idea then. Like, they hadn't seen anyone else who'd done it. I was the first person to cyberbag that I know of to do a, you know, I'm making art, contribute. And they said that for any other film, it would be tacky. But since the film was about DIY art, it kind of made it cooler that I was begging for my DIY art. You know, and they talked about how I had a PayPal logo on the website and how that would be like bad, like any other movie, you know, it'd be embarrassing for the director, but for my movie, it was part of the process and part of the fun. And I mean, this was when PayPal was like, most people didn't even use it because they didn't trust it. Like, people send money on the internet, you'll get your bank hacked, you know, like it wasn't as secure as it was now, but. Yeah, so I was the first person I know who did that, and it's kind of weird. It's like, I know that you're only as good as your last show is something they say in music, you know, and you really can't rest on your laurels. But there's some tiny part of me that is like, I was on the internet complaining before most of the current crop of like libertarian welfare whores who complain and try to raise money at it. Like I was doing it when those people were like kids, you know, like Cantwell, he's 34. Let's see. So in 2001, how old was Cantwell? That was 14 years ago. He was 20. Yeah. So he was still running for Libertarian Party office, I think, then. So it was all right. Yeah. I was a broke scumbag before it was cool. That's what I'm trying to say. So where'd you guys want to go with this? We had a place to go with it. What was it?
Well, I was kind of talking a little bit before about it's been suggested to me now how, say, talk about younger generations, because people are on like social media now since, you know, from when they're kids. And you see a lot of younger people that put their entire lives up online. They put all their details and stuff and, you know, like where they are at a certain time, where they're going and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like that would make you more comfortable with being spied on, because you think, well, this is all on the internet anyway, so, you know, who cares? You know?
Yeah, and your friend, how old was your friend that called you square for, or said you were paranoid for not wanting to give your fingerprint to Apple or to Samsung or Google?
That was my younger brother. He is about, what, he's 25? So he's not that much younger.
So, Nick, before you dropped out of school, what was your... What did people that you knew your age think about privacy?
Man, that's a good question, because we actually talked about that a lot in the global issues class that I had in my freshman year. And, I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure that I got a few people to agree with me, let's abolish the NSA. And I know I didn't get a majority, but I had at least one or two others. But I think that most of them were of the opinion, it's probably good for national security. I mean, why else would we have government agencies like this if they weren't there to fight terrorism?
Yeah.
I think that was most of their
opinions. They believe the lie.
Yep.
So the NSA is kind of an amorphous, like, it's over there, it's not really in my life thing to most people. How do most people you went to high school with think of as day-to-day privacy things that affect them? Like, did you ever hear anyone say, any of your classmates say, well, if you have nothing to hide, you shouldn't worry, anything like that?
I did hear a few people say that, mostly conservative-leaning people would say that. But it's not very often that would happen.
Yeah. I think it's probably they're more just blissfully unaware, I would guess.
Yeah.
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 So when those kids get a new smartphone for Christmas, first of all, do they even call it a smartphone or they just call it a phone? What do you kids call it? Phone?
We call them phones.
That can access the internet too. You call them phones?
All right. Yeah, even like the iPods we call phones mostly.
So when those kids get a new phone for Christmas, which they probably will, most of them, and, you know, it's Christmas morning and all of a sudden they're like setting up their phone and it says, you know, put your fingerprint here to activate, and then it says, or you can just type in a, you know, make up a password. What do you think they'll do?
They totally let them have it.
They go with the fingerprint because it's easier?
Yeah. Yeah.
They wouldn't,
I'm sure,
question
most
it.
Of them would. No. There might be a few of them that are paranoid enough to say, I don't know about that.
Did you ever have discussions with any of them about First or Second Amendment stuff?
Yeah, most people I know are all in favor of Second Amendment. I live around a bunch of hicks, and they have their collections. And but there are a few that are like, well, we should have background checks and blah, 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 blah. It's like, man, that's disappointing. I always bring up arguments against it, and they usually are like, okay, Nick, sure. But most of them are in favor of the right to self-defense and, of course, Second Amendment.
How about First Amendment stuff, which includes privacy?
Yeah, that's an interesting... I've never really had that conversation. I do have a lot of friends that would be like, yeah, First Amendment free speech all the way. There are a lot of conservative Christians that'll cite the freedom of religion, saying that I don't like the way they bring it up a lot of the time, but they do have sometimes they have a point, but sometimes it's not the right point, I should say.
Like what?
But other than that, so when the case with what was her name, the one judge who would not issue marriage licenses.
Oh, yeah, the county clerk, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say when they cite that it was her right to refuse service to gay couples, that was not in her First Amendment right. So I would say that's my biggest example I can think of off the top of my
head. It was absolutely not. And like, here's the thing that bugs me. Okay, like, first of all, on the Freedom Fiends, we generally talk about... We don't talk about the First Amendment and the Second Amendment because those are constructs of a government that generally ignores the constructs and doesn't abide by them. But, you know, we believe in the right to free speech and the right to bear arms, absolutely unlimited, 100%. Would you guys say that? I don't want to speak for
you. Oh, yeah.
But
definitely.
Yeah.
Dan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
So I would say that nobody in any government office has any First or Second Amendment rights because it's a government office. When it really comes down to it, the Bill of Rights is about protecting individual people from the government. So that doesn't, you know, if you're hired to do your stupid government job, which, you know, you're basically stealing anyway and living off taxes, which are theft, if you have a government job, you can't not do your job and say it's free speech. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the thing that I fear more than anything. Or not more than anything, but the thing that I fear with rights is people coming in and being told what a right is and not knowing the difference between negative rights, which are the good ones, which are real, the right not to be, you know, tread upon, versus positive rights, which is the bad ones, actually, ironically, which are like the right to a free education. That's not a right, you know. That's something that was made up by people like Bernie Sanders and Piven back in the day. So yeah, I worry about a time coming up very quickly when a vast majority of people don't even know what rights are and never believed that they had any and believe, you know, like I had a discussion with my sister and I said to her that my right to bear arms was far more important to me than my right to vote. And she thought I was insane. I mean, she thought I was, like, speaking Martian. But I absolutely believe that. I don't even vote. And when I told my dad I didn't vote, you know, my sister's an inveterate liberal, and my dad's an inveterate conservative. And when I told both of them this, like, they were shocked. Like, when I told my dad I didn't vote, he had to, like, sit down and, like, clutch his chest like he was going to have a heart attack. I mean, I'm not gay, and he's homophobic, but I think he would have been less harmed if I told him I was gay. He was really harmed when I told him I wasn't voting anymore. Like, and he said, I can't believe you're telling me this, son. Your founding fathers fought and died for your right to vote. And I'm like, what, my right to pick, like, you know, one corporate stooge over another who both want to rob me and take all my rights? And he's like, but it's the process and the right. You know, like, he didn't really have a comeback for that. He knows it's true. Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly, because if no one voted, like, if the turnout was so low, then you would basically, then politicians would have zero mandate because it would show. That would be the ultimate act of democracy.
They'd have their wife vote for them, and they'd say, see, it's 100% for me. No mandate. And then they'd say, the people that didn't show up and vote, they don't get to have any say in what happens to them, because we're going to do what we want to them. Show me on the doll where the political process touched you. Bad touch. We'll be back for the redemption in the third act on The Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Watching Portlandia is now last vestige of man's punk rock life. Man, this site, Hard Times, thehardtimes.net, it's hilarious, man. Dig it. You know, there was, I saw really a too soon thing recently. There is one punk rock band in the state of Wyoming. They're called Teenage Bottle Rocket. I mean, there might be, you know, another band that just started or put out, one song on the internet. I almost said put out a cassette. I'm like, what's a cassette? And I was reminded of, did you see this week's peep show, Dan?
No, actually, I haven't started the new series yet.
Where Jeremy goes full on gay.
No, don't tell me. I haven't started the new series yet.
That's a spoiler alert. But is it really a spoiler alert? I mean, you know, it's Jeremy. So, and you know, he's like 35 or something, and he's dating this guy that's like 21, and he gives him he's like, here, I made a mixtape for you. It's a CD of Beastie Boys. They're really good. You should check it out. And his 21-year-old boyfriend says, or he's probably like 25. He's like, I don't own a CD player. The Beastie Boys started before I was born, and one of them's dead. So, speaking of that, there's we're talking about technology and people's reaction to it. But so there's this one punk band called Teenage Bottle Rocket. It's been around for, 15 years and put out a bunch of records and toured. And people have heard of them outside of Wyoming. And recently, like, one of them was in a coma. I don't even know what's happened. He might have died. He might have recovered. I don't know. But I posted it and I said, member of Teenage Bottle Rocket finally does something punk. Too soon. All right. So I guess what we've talked a lot about, to kind of tie it all together, we've talked about the hardware of computing throughout the ages and how it's changed from, this thing that fills a room, costs $1 million, weighs a ton, requires a team of scientists in lab coats to run, and, can barely play tic-tac-toe, to, this thing that fits in your pocket and costs less than $100 and has more computing power than the entire NASA computing grid that put a man on the moon. And you can do almost anything with it. But most people just share cat pictures and complain and swipe left or swipe right and rate other things done by other people. That's the thing. It's like, I don't think I'm ever going to sit down and like edit a feature film on a phablet, on a phone. I think I'm going to be the last guy with a computer with a mouse and a chair and a table and a keyboard, because I can still do more faster by far on that than I can on the little stuff. But the little stuff is great for consuming media, which is all the rage, and it's what all the kids do. But I really want to talk about what's far more important than the hardware, even, and the software, is like the wetware. The human, what's between your ears, that's connected to the computer. And if that thing gives up too much of itself to the Borg and to, like, the society around it, gives up too much, is willing to trade security for liberty, then we're doomed. We're doomed as a species. So don't doom yourself as a species. Keep some of that edge. Keep some of that doubt. Keep some of that, I don't trust the man. Because anybody who wants to represent you really just wants to steal from you. There's no ethical reason for you to need a king or a leader or a congressman or any kind of representative. And I'm going to pass over to anybody else who wants to pick up the speaking stick. Go ahead, guys.
Well, you kind of mentioned like a little bit earlier on as well about, we've been talking about some of the negative sides as well of like technology and things. But, you know, if you look at it this way, good and evil, they're two sides of the same coin, basically. You can't have one without the other, because if there was nothing bad, how would you know what good was? And there is a lot of negative sides to technology, but there's so many positive sides as well. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. So we shouldn't really get down about it. It's a lot of good things, like the show.
Worms.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, that was fun.
I like computers. I think they're kind of magical because we can do this kind of stuff. And our friends aren't limited to whoever was geographically born within a few miles of us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, my dad's 93. My dad has traveled around the world a little bit. He's been to Washington, D.C., and he's been to England, and he's been to California a couple times. But he's pretty much spent all of his life within, like, 30 miles of where he's born. He doesn't really know how to use the internet either.
But don't spend all your time on Facebook.
Yeah. Time's up.